Good morning, everyone. TJ Schwartz here. Welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Lucas Burnley. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm a little frazzled this week.
Yeah,
Yeah,
same.
as
Seems
per
like
usual.
a pattern for
Yeah.
me.
I mean, I'm
Maybe
not
for us.
busy, but I
Yeah.
am scattered.
Yeah. Well,
You've been efficient though this week.
this week man, felt really good this week. We put together a good campaign because I look at every week as I've said it before, it's a lot like a sports team. It's like the game's on Friday, so you do your rhythm and you like every week is its own kind of cell, where we start at the top and go through our production list and do the same thing every week. So we're always kind of comparing weeks to one another, like, man, this week wasn't what we try to do. So next week, if we rearrange or we make sure we have this in supply or whatever, then we'll do better. And we started to put it together this week because we, brought Steven on board full time, and got the X9 rolling early in the year. And so for a couple weeks there, we were in a catch up mode. Like January was basically the catch up month because December we kind of slid on custom orders and things. So those like weekly schedules got a little bit rocky because it just eventually, if you're behind, you just get to the point where it's like whack-a-mole. Like go as fast as you can, get, every day is like kind of fly by the seat of your pants for a little while there, trying to just catch up. But now we're kind of back on the strategy and the rhythm for the first time of the year, it feels like.
Nice.
And so it was a strong week. It felt good. So I'm
So your man, your cycle is really fast. So when you say like weekly, you're not doing weekly drops right now, are you?
Yeah.
You are. Okay. That is insane.
So we do every single thing that we do at period in the whole shop, we do every week. So there's nothing that gets like bi-weekly splits or anything like that. It's
Dude, I can't wrap my head around that.
obviously requires delegation, requires enough machines to be able to spread it out like that. But so it took a while to get it dialed, but it works amazing because it's like the reason really we have to do it is because of our custom ordering. Because we get custom orders flowing in every week, and there's no way that we could inventory to prep for those orders because with the possible configurations that everyone could get, we have like four or five blade finishes, we have like nine different handle
That's
scales.
what I mean, man.
So everything has to be made to order. But if we had like a rhythm of like a monthly cycle, then people will be waiting like a month or two for their knife. You know what I mean? Which isn't the end of the world, but with a weekly schedule, it's like, let's say someone places a custom order. The first week, we're going to try to get it out. And then sometimes like something interferes with it. It's like, well, we didn't have the right material right here. Like, oh, these pieces of G10 were not good. There's voids. So like maybe on Thursdays, like our shipping day, where all of the week work from the week converges in the clean room to assemble and ship. And
It's
so
the
let's
only day you ship.
only day. Yeah. And so let's say like someone had ordered something with OD G10 scales. And so we machined them, we finished them, we put them in the clean room. Came time to assemble their knife on Thursday. Let's say those scales were scrap, where like we didn't notice a bubble in them or a void or they didn't fit the hole diameter, whatever. Then we just uncheck it from the list. And then the next week we come back and do it again. So it's like every week you're doing this week's orders plus the reworks from last week. And so it's
What is
like,
it? How many reworks do you have? This is always something that's interesting to me.
not very many. This week it was kind of crazy, actually. We had a large sum of knives that we finished, and we had one knife get rejected for
That's
really any
amazing.
reason. And so yeah, it was some weeks are worse than others. We've had times where like a string of scales has the same issue and it's like, okay, next week we got to make like 15 or 20 of these one model scales or whatever it is. So usually it comes in a surge. It's either we have perfect or it's way off, you know what I mean? So trying to control that, but that's the beauty of the weekly thing is we react so fast to that, you know what I mean? It's not like, we could be in a position where it's like, okay, we did 400 tangs, 400 scales, 400 sheaths. Now let's build this huge batch for like a quarterly drop or whatever. And it's like, oh shoot, 200 of these scales had an issue. So I like the repeating week after week and just perfecting and tuning and catching all of our mistakes quickly.
So I guess ultimately we do something similar. The problem for, I don't know if it's a problem even, is that we have so many products. So I would say we are in general dropping something every 1 to 2 weeks. So there's like a cycle there that's happening. It's just impressive to me that it's on one or a few product lines for you, because knives are our slowest output. And you're also doing something that's really interesting to me, which is you're doing orders, but you're also doing drops. And I would say that in general, those two things are not being run together by most brands.
Yeah. And honestly, we were doing only the custom orders and it was going really well. But the problem with that is on Monday morning, I create the spreadsheet for the previous 7 days of custom orders. So it's like the guys come in, they look at the spreadsheet. Every week we just call it a tab. It's like I have a Google sheet where we put a new tab on the bottom of the screen for each week. And so it's like they look at the new tab and they see what's on there. And the problem with only doing that is that sometimes they're small, sometimes they're big, sometimes they overwhelm you, sometimes they're too easy, right? And it's like I have no real
Control.
control over what our shop is doing if all of the control is just who shows up and orders stuff. And so I realized not even necessarily to sell more knives, but just to control, to basically like fill in the gaps and like level the production output. Was we add the drops as like filler so that I can have the decision to be able to be like, okay, this week's gonna be a short week. We didn't have like a huge custom order sheet. So it's like, let's just like increase our drop a little bit this week, So, or
So
this
you're
week
base,
was,
yeah, you're trying to hit just a consistent flow.
trying to
So
flatten it
I
out.
guess what do you do in the case that like you have a very heavy order week? Do you I guess you adjust your drop the kind of the same
Yeah,
way?
because one thing we can do is we can just push the drop to the next week and be like, okay,
Or
we're
skip it.
holding. And so that has, I think it was about 6 months ago we started doing the drop. That was definitely what was missing because even if it was working great before that, there was actually quite a bit of like uneasy nights of like not getting sleep because it's like I don't feel like I have any control. You know what I mean? It's like, what if next week they just didn't order knives? You know what I mean? What if, like, if it's spring break and everybody's out with their kids and not ordering knives, like, there's, I can't, I just have, I'm completely reactionary if I'm just taking custom orders. And I just could not live with that. Like, it was difficult. And so that's where the drops, it like gives me the sense of stability of like, well, regardless of the custom orders, we're going to at least do a drop, right? So I hope the custom orders go well, but we're going to be making something regardless, right? So,
And your drops are always like one configuration.
more than one. So we've been throttled quite a bit on the drops to like they're smaller than what I've wanted them to be for quite a while. Custom orders have been going super well, and there was actually in January, custom orders were strong enough. And we were far enough behind. We basically didn't drop anything in January because we just had to do custom orders. There's no more time. But with the X9 coming in and Steven coming in, we now have more ample capacity for the drops. And the model moving forward is probably like three different configurations every week.
That's wild. When did Steven come on full time?
February 1st was like technically a start date. He's kind of been working. He was damn near full time before that, but as like a contractor. And so that
So now
was,
he's like in the company. Dude, that's exciting.
So yeah, it's going smooth. And like I said, this week we put it together where it's like the weekly schedule. We call it a nominal week. If this is the schedule and we do it and we don't have to like, okay, push that to next week. We got to catch up on this. That would make it not a nominal week. So every week at the, on Thursday, we're like, okay, yeah, we did it. That was clean. That was tight. We finished the week cycle. That means Monday's a fresh start and we do the thing again. And this week was one of the first in a while where it felt like that we just nailed from every aspect. Because what happened was in January, we were catching up, right? And we had the X9, we had Steven, we were moving more knives through the shop than ever before. But we overran our supply chain really fast because it's like there's a lead time ordering steel, there's a lead time at water jet, there's a lead time surface grinding, there's a lead time at heat treat. There's, and it's like, so if you have kind of the stable flow, predictability, and all that, and then you bump up your output, it's like you have this lag of like, well, the supply chain needs like a good 30 days to build to match your throughput. And so for February, for the first like 2 weeks, we kind of ran out of raw materials. So we had a couple weeks there where we literally worked like 2 or 3 days, and we just finished every piece of steel there was, and we're just waiting for that steel to kind of like come through the pipeline. And this was the first week where it's like, okay, we have the equipment, we got the employees, we've got the supply chain to match. It like kind of all came together finally, which feels really good.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy. Again, I just can't wrap my head around a 7 day cycle time. And I think it is just literally the way that I've worked over the years. I can see it on specific products, but there's so much kind of like scatter that I can't wrap my head around that.
Well, and the reason we started doing it is back when we were in the garage and it was just Dalton and me, I found like I was spending almost all my time thinking about what to have him do next. And everything was an optimization thing, like we talked about last week. It was like, it's better for him to machine a bunch of tangs for the next 2 days, send him to heat treat, and then after that, let me think, probably scales, no sheaths. And I'm like constantly in that game of like trying to figure out how to strategize. And it's like, well, Overland's in ODG10 are like getting these orders are getting a little old. Maybe he should quit on the sheaths for a minute and go make some scales that are OD green. And it's like that was just all I really thought about. And then I was like, well, if we had a weekly schedule where Dalton would come in and he knew what he was doing. And then we had a spreadsheet. So it's like he knows what we're behind on. He knows what's missing. And we do everything every week. Basically, my decision-making load goes way down. You know
That's
what I
the
mean?
biggest key, dude. That's like my biggest fear around scaling is just knowing my propensities, just or inability to kind of like categorize certain types of information and then like always be solving the problem. So it's, I guess my question for you around that would be like, when did you get to a point? Because despite wanting to do that, you still have to be at a point of flow to make that work. So it's like your supply chain had to get to a point where you had enough moving through it at all times to be doing those jobs where you're not getting bottlenecked. How long do you think you've been or had the ability to do that? I mean, you're saying since you were in the garage.
Yeah, I mean we had it numerous times. We've had it dialed in like in a rhythm for a few months where this weekly schedule is working great, but then as soon as you add either you add more sales than before, or you add another machine, or you add another employee, or you add another process or model, then it destabilizes it. And so every time I do that, it's kind of like buckle up because we're going to have to, the weekly schedule is going to have to adapt now. And sometimes it takes a month or two before it like restabilizes again. But that's pretty much, I kind of feel like that's almost my job in the business is stabilizing into that weekly thing. Because if I didn't get really proactive about it, it naturally devolves into whack-a-mole. So it's like sometimes it's like the decision making almost feels strange because it's like, why would I do this right now when I could just pick it up next week? And it's like, well, no, because we want next week to be a fresh start. Because it like the more that kind of carries over and bleeds over into the next week, then the more next week screwed up.
You just
And then
start to get
it just
back and back.
waterfalls. So it's
Dude.
kind of like you do things that feel inefficient in the moment. But then I think when you zoom out and you look at the repetitiveness, that's when it gets like it starts to really get good, you know?
Well, and there's a way like hearing it. I mean, there's a way to stabilize, like if you know that when you are in development process, everything else gets destabilized, it's like at a point, and this is the like the history of shops kind of, right? Like development R&D goes into another pod, and then the R&D is not putting production out of whack, but then it's more machines and it's either you off the main floor or someone else. Right now, dude, I love reading historical texts that like tie into what we are doing. I've talked about the Whitesmiths of Taunton before, which is Harvard Business Review. That one is about basically like a silverware, I guess, producer from like right in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, but it's like single maker up to the Industrial Revolution. Really interesting. The one that I'm reading right now is on the Bergmaster, which is the cool rotary like indexing drill presses. They made
Yeah,
a lot
those are
of other
sweet.
stuff too, but basically it parallels a lot of this where you have like founder, you have like someone who is having an idea, building a product, that product grows. Where I'm at in the book right now is essentially when they were bought by like a big conglomerate. They're supposed to remain intact, but what they're struggling with is actually all of these super scrappy founder created working mechanisms that when like this, Hudel comes in and they have like their management technique and their people, they're like, this doesn't work. This doesn't fit our management. But what it starts doing is like slowly starts breaking the company. And it's like listening to you talk about this, it's really interesting because you see that parallel of like, this is the way that your brain is putting together your production and your product to fit you and your team. And that's exactly what they had. Like they basically had groups where it's like, no, like production and assembly are talking constantly, like outside of meetings, because the flow, like you need a casting to come through at the same time. And they were really limited on space. And so all of these things had to be dialed, but it was like unstructured, but like unstructured in a way that there was a lot of trust. So Hudel comes in, they basically build them a huge new facility. And now they want those meetings to happen at specific times. And like castings start building up. And like these, it's just really, I don't know, man. It's like a fun process to look at.
I totally know what you're saying there. I might have to read that book. That's interesting.
It's a pretty interesting one. It's called The Day the Machine Stopped, I think. And it's basically like they were slowly climbing up the food chain from like a small machine tool manufacturer into like a big dog. And I'm only midway through the book, so I don't know how the machine stopped. But it's interesting, man. I don't look at them as like cautionary tales, but I think we have this tendency to almost feel like we are the first ones experiencing, at least I do, like you're like operating in a closed loop. Like this is my experience. I'm having these problems. I'm having these successes. And it's like, no, man. It's almost like this universal repeating story, I feel like.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, I could totally picture that if we were, let's say, acquired and had to align with like a corporate structure of manufacturing. I mean, what we're doing is not that way, you know, that
They'd be like, this doesn't make
it'd
any
clash.
sense. Yeah.
Because I mean, you could look at our situation and immediately say, like, so if you're doing everything every week, that means you're setting up a machine to do a job, doing it for 6 hours, and then tearing it down into something different. It's like that's not how you would operate if you're doing 50 employees, right? And so I understand that there's like the scalability we're gonna have to continue to adapt. But if you just instantly tried to adopt a different process, like, yeah, it would jack it
Well,
up.
and that becomes this issue of like, where is the value? If the value is like purely bottom line, that leads to certain decisions. And I think that in our industry, one of the things that not that makes it special, but that like is really satisfying for the people who are starting the companies is that like we love what we do from a standpoint of like, dude, I love everything in my shop. I geek out over like talking with you last week about new CNC machine. There's not really anything that I'm more excited about buying from like a toy standpoint than a CNC. And it's also a purely business decision. I would guess that universally, there's very few shop owners that are not psyched to put another machine on the floor.
Especially one that's fancy or
That's
different, or
fancy or different. Yeah, totally. Right.
Definitely.
Materials. It's like you're excited about a material. You're excited about a product. It's like top to bottom, the interest level is high. And I think that that's one of the biggest risks is if it starts to go in a way where it's just purely profit driven, I think that's easy to lose. And if you lose that, that is where, like right now in the book, the machinists are starting to get bummed out. And it's like, if you have this thing where it used to be like the white collar sales guys had come from the machine shop. Okay. So they knew the jobs, they knew the machinists. And now you've got these guys like coming out from the office who they're not involved in the product at all.
They came through like academia or whatever.
Yeah, it starts to like shift and they're like, well, we know this stuff, you know? It's like, I guess that in some ways is like the engineer machinist conversation. And early on, I worked in enough jobs where like I worked with guys out of industry or like that had worked at like the national labs. And that was like the funny thing was like the machinists always had opinions about engineers and vice versa. Like,
Totally. Yeah, it's an age-old trope, that's for
yeah.
sure. That's meme worthy. And honestly, what we're doing though, I gotta say, like, it's a lot of borrowed knowledge in the way that I'm doing it. And
Yeah.
from mainly Japanese auto manufacturing, we
Right.
basically built a mini version of that. Because there's the Kanban, which is the obvious one. Then there's like when the Japanese developed, like they basically pioneered like just-in-time manufacturing.
Right.
And then now it's synonymous with automobiles, like everyone's doing it. But that's
Yeah.
just because the Japanese, like Subaru and Toyota in the 80s,
Right.
basically
Who was the
freaking.
guy? I this like I have the books on my shelf probably. Who is the guy that like pioneered?
I honestly
Do you
forget the
remember?
name.
Okay. I was gonna say like that's like a good one if you can like throw out some book recommendations.
So I've learned it. I haven't read like a lot of in-depth books about it, to be honest. I've mostly read just articles and like
Right.
Wikipedia and stuff. So I
And
should.
like related like stuff from machinists in this space, like what like
Anecdotal stuff.
Saunders
And
and Pearson probably, right?
But the key component, see, just-in-time manufacturing, a lot of people in like COVID especially, it kind of got that phrase kind of became a dirty word because of like a lot of
Right.
supply chains broke because of it. But what a lot of people haven't realized about just-in-time manufacturing is it's not just about like monetary efficiency with keeping like a low inventory level. It's also the main benefit is just overall quality. Because like if you're Toyota and you have a headlight assembly coming in, the way Ford used to do it is you order 100,000 of them for the quarter,
Right.
and like they arrive, you've got 100,000 cars that are ready for the headlights, and you're just going to start building them, and you realize the headlight assembly leaks or it has fog in it or whatever.
Right.
If you're Ford and that's your model, you have to install them. You have no option, right? Because you have too
And then
much
you do a
inventory,
recall,
and then you do a recall.
essentially.
And then I'm not saying Ford nowadays, because everyone's on the same Toyota model now, but like in the 70s, it was like the rate of reworks on like Detroit vehicles, where they would come off the line and then they would immediately go to this other factory where they would rework them. It was like an enormous percentage of them were immediately deemed as flawed and had to go right back in. And it's not, it's partly because they didn't have the just-in-time and Kanban thing figured out, where they were forced, because of the way they're setting it up, they're forced to use bad parts, because they
Right.
had you. Whereas if you're in just in time, let's say you're to, you know, Toyota, you get your you're doing, let's say you're doing 1,000 Tacomas a week, I want a delivery of 1,000 headlights a week. I don't want 100,000 of them for the next year.
Right.
So if those 1,000 headlights are bad, you call up the supplier and you say, they're bad. We're sending them back. It delays you a couple weeks, right?
A couple,
Where,
right. You're
and
not losing everything.
yeah, one of the things, the phrases that you hear about Toyota is they're known for everyone on the shop, on the assembly line, has the authority to stop the assembly line, every single person.
Dude, that's one of
So,
my favorite, that's one of my favorite aspects of this.
yeah.
Right? From like an ownership standpoint, as I always have to balance this thing of like, I am not a good employee, right? I never have been. Like I say that I struggle internally, I struggle. But when I look at having employees, I'm always thinking about like, what are the things that make it easier for me or make me feel more valued? And just that ability to have choice and decision is huge, right? If you can push, you'd be like, this isn't up to my standards. I'm stopping this. Dude, that's huge.
And it's partly the cultural side of it, but it, like I said, if you don't have that just in time situation where you're being actively fed from your supply
Right.
chain in small quantities, if you don't have that, you literally can't stop because you're like,
Right.
hey, foreman, these wiring harnesses, like, they're a little short. I have to like stretch it to plug it in. It's like, oh, we got 100,000 of them. So I'll tell the supplier
Yep.
next year's model, that's going to be a little longer. That, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's why this, the compressing the loop of discovering a problem, being able to correct it. And so the, but the way the Japanese had to build their factories to do it is, let's say like the sheet metal stamping area, the fenders or whatever.
Right.
If you're Ford or whatever, it's really, really, really expensive and time consuming to set up like a stamping machine, tune it all in. And they're
Right.
like, dang, we set up this machine, took us a week to set it up,
Yep.
run a
Run all the
year's worth
parts
of
for the year.
fenders. And it's like, and Toyota realized we have to do this, we have to change the way we design our machines and fixtures
Right.
so that they can quickly be switched.
Yep.
Because the only way to load manage all these small supply chain things in like in small batch,
Yeah.
it all hinges on quick turnover of machines
Yep.
doing different jobs. And so that's what we've tried to do in our shop is like Pearson pallets and tooling that's like so well organized that it's like we have a sheet for doing scales. We have a sheet for doing the tangs of the MagnaCut knives. We have a sheet for doing the tangs of the A2 knives. And it's like the carousel in the X7. It's like when you're going to do these scales, put these tools in these pockets. And it's like,
Yep.
then you get the other sheet and you're like, okay, I'm going to change over to this tangs
Yep.
for the MagnaCut. Okay, tool pocket number 6 and number 9 need to switch to these tools. And
Yeah.
it's like you if you don't have it fast to switch, then you feel like you're forced to do large volumes to make up for the fact that you took so long to set it up.
So basically, with just-in-time manufacturing, like at our scale, you have essentially you have a higher upfront equipment and tooling cost. That's like almost the assumption, right? And this could go from like hand making something on, right? Because to be efficient, if you're hand making something, building a fixture is still going to allow you to do that task more repeatably than setting it up every time. But you need the time to build the fixture. Right. This is one of those areas that I'm really like protective around time because if you're running at 90% and you're successful, you actually still can't really make changes. Right. And I always wonder, I'm like, what is the what's like the ideal, what would the ideal percentage of your available time or resources be? Like in my brain, I think like 33% would be amazing. It's probably not doable. Maybe it's 50 or 80, right? Or 70. But that right there, you either have to have, and well, and in our case, actually, you have two because you have to have the money to upgrade machinery, but then you also have the time to set it up. And I think that with knife making, this is actually one of the biggest, not limiting factors, but like biggest hurdles for people kind of like either increasing output or increasing revenue. It's that you just actually can't get out from underneath the work that is like feeding your family, right?
You're right. And it front loads it, which is what you're saying,
Front
which is
loads
like
it,
not
yeah.
only the cost, but like it doesn't work to just get it running. Because if
Right.
you have to hold your, tongue just right and like close one eye and like dial this thing in and get it tuned, and it takes you a few hours, and it's like, well, okay, it's tuned, it's everything's working. Make a crap load of them before we have to
Yeah.
tear it down again. It's like, cannot have it. It has to be, everything has to be so tight that the very first part every time is good, and then you can
Yeah.
switch like in this blink of an eye. And so that's basically the whole model is like, and that's why we don't, there's a bunch of supply chain decisions we've made in regard to that too.
Yeah.
Because let's say, for example, like with our heat treat, they do a ton of magnet cut,
Yeah.
ton of, like every day, basically. And to do our schedule, we have to heat treat every week, right?
Wow.
And so we do a batch of heat treat every single week. And if we, like, let's say hypothetically, everyone in the Boise area is doing the same heat treat.
Yeah.
They're doing the same magnet cut
Yeah.
hardness and stuff. It's like if we wanted to get really picky, and I like the hardness, but it's like if I wanted to get really picky and say, no, I want you to do like this little different thing,
Yeah.
then we no longer could realistically do it every week, because it's like they're not going to do a weird random process every single
Now
week.
you end up in, yeah, an anomalous cycle. You, that's a good point too, which is I keep saying like to myself, let the efficient things be efficient. Because I have a tendency to always want to be like slightly off of center. Like I want something to be different. And I have to look at it from the standpoint of like, does the difference provide value? Or is it just that that's a concept that I have? And so I really have to look at that. That would be a prime example where just wanting for the sake of like to be able to say, like, no, we do it this way, you're eliminating a huge component of like efficiency and productivity that is actually where it needs to be from a quality standpoint.
And the hard part about building the just-in-time model is like only one thing in the whole process taking more than a week to do really kind of ruins everything. You know what I
Assuming
mean?
your cycle is a week. So for you,
Whatever your
that. So
cycle
you
is.
could skip if someone wanted 2 weeks. Here's a question. If you had to give someone advice for like starting that, right? Like, where do you start to look at just-in-time manufacturing? And I've got a follow-up question, but where do you start?
Honestly, I think you have to look at every supply chain, like if you draw out your whole process, every one of them has some part that is like takes longer than everything else. It's frustrating. We have a heat treat in the valley. For a lot of people, that would be heat treat. It's like, well, I have to do enough volume to be able to mail my heat treat to someone and it be worthwhile. And then they have to heat
Right.
treat it and mail it. If that's like a part of your process, which for a lot of people it is, you have to, if it can't be adjusted or changed, it can't be fixed, it just has to be slow. You kind of have to pick that as like the center of designing the rest of the process around it. Does that make sense?
So you're saying pick the slowest process or the most critical component as the baseline,
If
or
there's a it, like we can compress every one of our processes into 1 week. Most
right.
people, I would argue, are not going to be able to do that because they
Yes.
don't live in Boise.
Yep.
Because that's kind of like the golden
Yeah,
ticket
yeah,
for
yeah.
us.
So, I mean, mine might literally be like if I were to do this, it might be a month, but it's also product dependent, and that's the issue. So, with ADHD, one of the things that I struggle with is looking at everything all at once and then essentially like blowing a fuse and being like, I can't deal with just in time on every single product line. 'Cause my brain starts going to like, dude, how do I track that into like design work? And like, how do I do that for SIPOPs? And how do I do that for apparel? And I realize like, I don't have to. It's just the natural process. So looking at it from a standpoint of like, from the process, bringing a process into either a product line or something like that, it's like, what is the most important component? Like, where's the where?
Let me think if I can answer that.
That's weird.
Yeah, and this is where if you're trying to dial something like this in, it sounds crazy, but this is where I get into like the process of the product and
Yeah.
process-oriented design is like part of the reason our cycle can be a week is anything that we could not compress into that week, we got rid of.
You got rid of. See, and that right there, that's like you and I are so different in this. I don't feel like I'm a maximalist, but I just realized like I'm always working on a lot of things. So knowing that is a tendency doesn't allow me to probably not make let the efficient things be efficient. It's just figuring out where that works and where it's like, nope, that's not going to fit.
And an example of that is so we milled bevels until just recently. All of our
Yeah.
bevels were milled. It's not a good way to do it. It's not
Right.
efficient. It's more labor intensive. It takes a lot of spindle time. It's just not a good way to do knife bevels. Like as you
It's like
grow.
it's relative as you grow because for so like I'm hard milling now. It is a huge like upgrade from hand grinding everything.
It's a good process in the beginning, but the window is pretty
Right.
narrow where
So
it
I
makes
can see it
sense.
already. Yeah.
And it's like so we extended that way longer. We should have been grinding way a long time ago, but the reason we didn't is the milling of the bevels allowed for that weekly schedule to stay on track. Because as soon as we need to stack 200 knives in a box and send them out for bevel grinding, the whole business basically breaks, right? And so it was like we until we bring that grinding in house, we cannot do like, okay, we want 30 knives and then shut it down, right? That's you're not going to get a hold of like Larkin or somebody, and say, I'm going to send you 30 knives every week. No, like
No.
no way. And so I learned that because we did the Confidant. I was originally going to send it out for bevel grinding when I designed that knife.
Right.
We sent out the first 200 of them. They got bevel ground. They came back, and I immediately realized, like the day they showed up, I was like, "This is not going to work because
That's not
our
the, yeah, that's
the
not the
way we
process.
manufacture is not this way, right? It's just not. It doesn't align with our rhythm at all,
Yeah.
and we cannot. And there's no way we could force it to. And so, because you'd have to do,
Rhythm is a huge, actually a huge component. And that's something that I look at now, like, or tempo, or however you want to look at it. But peak efficiency in one area can be a huge problem, right? So it's actually like the tempo of the things. Like, I feel for us, I'm like, I would rather be slightly slower at certain things and have them align well in the overall flow. By way of example, so one thing that I'm trying to stop doing is like relying on my skill as a finishing tool. So like you and I have talked about it. Like me finishing hard milled bevels, I can go to a flat platen on a belt grinder and do it super quickly. Really, really well, but that's me, right? I can't pass that task on to like the majority of people. So yesterday I was doing handle scales and I was doing the same thing. Like right now, I'm still in a prototype plus process. So like the handle scales are coming out of tabs. That will change, but right now I need to remove the tabs from the scales. Easiest thing for me to do is just walk up to the grinder and kind of like just zip them off. But it's actually a complex task from like a hand controlled process standpoint because you have to keep everything square, you have to feather in and out, you can't like dig. And I looked and I was like, what would this look like if I did it in a teachable way? And I actually went to my bench and I did it with files and sandpaper. And I was like, this does two things. It's fast enough that if I'm not doing it, it's not a problem. It teaches good hand control for finishing processes. It's just not the most efficient, but for that task right now, I think it would be like I'm pretty sure I could teach someone in, an afternoon how to do that up to the standard that I need it. But also, like with a hand-controlled process like that, if there's a mistake, it's easier to see. You don't make mistakes fast, so there's a really good chance that I would be able to correct someone's mistake, but I also start to be able to see if they have the ability to see what I'm looking for. And so this is like, it's like a different way of thinking, kind of, So I'm, certain way, I feel like I'm almost trying to slow things down, but I think it will increase like net efficiency.
Well, and like I've said many times, is stable and reliable is more important than efficient.
Absolutely.
It's because if you have 25, 50 processes and they're all super efficient, but there's like a 10% chance that any one of them is going to have a problem, like you're going to end up with a bad part, but it's efficient, it's fast, but it has like a 10%
You
failure
just make
rate.
mistakes
You
faster.
multiply that across 25 p processes every single week, you're going to be fighting, right? You're going to be dealing with that. And it's like, yeah, you have a lot of parts, but like the failure rate's high enough across the board that you're always failing. Whereas it's like maybe you have processes that are like half as fast, but 99% effective. That's, slow, steady.
Slow, what is
What?
it? Slow is smooth, smooth is
Smooth is
fast.
fast. That, I mean, there's a reason that's such a,
Oh, it's so
overused
good.
phrase, but yeah, that's kind of where we're at is like we built something stable and reliable, but now they're not, those stable, reliable things are now starting to feel not fast enough in certain areas. So now I need them to be faster and stable and reliable. And usually getting that involves heavy R&D. And you don't necessarily want to do that in the very beginning because to get fast, stable, and reliable out of the box across the board, you need like a team of engineers to do it. You know what I mean? So
And
go
even
stay.
then, like one of the nice things I feel like for you and I is like we do get these windows into like production process and cycles at like larger companies. And so it's interesting to see, like we were talking about houses a little while ago, and I was saying, like, yeah, you can like buy an inexpensive house and have problems, and you can also have a custom home built and have problems. It's really easy to be like, I'm having these problems. And then you realize like a company at scale is still having those problems,
For
right?
sure.
Despite having an engineering team or the resources, or that's, yeah. I think so for me right now, yeah, I think the goal is that slow is smooth thing. Consistency and not worrying about like overarching like output. It's like just refining and smoothing out the process. And that, at small business scale, like these are questions of like priority that are actually difficult, right? Because it's really tempting to look at something and be like, man, if I can just do this, I can hit these numbers, right? Or if I do this, I can afford this machine. Or I don't know if did I mention this on the podcast last time around like goal setting? Did we talk about that at all?
A little bit,
Okay. So this keeps coming into it, which is this like removing timelines from goal setting. Because I think what happens is like for myself, if I put a timeline on something, I start, it's almost like the having to order 100,000 headlights. There's a point where I'm having to make decisions to hit that timeline that actually probably don't align with the overarching goal.
Well, one thing I might point out is maybe for me at least, not eliminating, because I feel the same way about the bigger timelines, longer, bigger, far-reaching goals. I've found that particularly like with this weekly schedule, it's like small goals with small timelines stacked over and over
Stack
again.
totally. Dude,
So
that right there, that's a great takeaway, and like why these conversations I think are so valuable.
Yeah, because like a big timeline with a big goal, it's like it's not actionable. You know what I mean? But and that's where like one thing about our weekly schedule is that it creates this sense of urgency that's sometimes legit, but sometimes that urgency is a little bit artificial. Because for example, let's say we're caught
That's
up.
fine, yeah.
Yeah, let's say we're caught up and it's like we have time. Like we're overproducing compared to
Easy.
in orders. But everything has to be done by the end of the week. It doesn't matter that we're caught up and that we're in a good position. The urgency is still there because none of this is supposed to carry over to next week. It's all supposed to be done this week. That's
Right.
sort of an artificially imposed structure that's like creating an urgency. But the urgency is like a really healthy thing, I think, in small chunks like that. So it's not like the kind of like what you're saying. It's not like having your team, you have a meeting. It's like, we want to do this amount of revenue this year. Everyone
Yeah.
go.
Yeah,
You
yeah,
know,
yeah. Make it happen.
it's like, no, we want this list, this condensed paper of our weekly list. We want it all done this
Yeah.
week. And then next week, we want it all done again. You know what I mean? So it's like bite-size urgency and goals.
It's
And then you
consi Dude, I keep
slowly
having
increase
these
them.
things like around the so I look at the majority of the success in my life has come from the things that I can be consistent with. Right. It's not the moonshots, man. It's like these steps leading up to, and you start to see this with kids too. Like I know I say a lot, freedom through structure. And I have a feeling that's probably one of the things that like my boys will be laughing about at some point because they've heard it 5,000 times and just be like, ugh, like whatever. But it's true. You look and you're like, okay, if you're trying to train a dog, it's like consistency. Right. If you're trying to hit a bedtime routine or like fitness goals or whatever, it's just consistency. It's like it really is. But it with consistency, it's like it's small changes just repeated and stacked. You know, same with investing. It's like, yeah, great. You want to be a millionaire, multimillionaire, but you got if you put $5 a day into an account, you're better off than waiting till you have $100,000, you know, like.
And if you're giving yourself this sense of urgency that I need to have X amount of money when I'm 65,
Yeah.
it's a bad goal.
Yeah.
The goal is I need to have the urgency to put X amount away every month
Yeah.
and not think really big
Starting
picture.
now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And so it's like
You almost don't worry about, you don't worry about like that far timeline. 'Cause there's also no guarantee. I deal with this constantly, like again, around kids right now. I'm like, what matters right now? Is like how I show up consistently to them now, not like an aspirational, like I'm going to show up for them later. Or it's just like, I think that that is what will allow for a good relationship and like healthy
And you don't have to
family
be,
structure.
you don't have to be a superhero. You just have to be there. You know what I
Just
mean? It's
have to
like,
show up.
yeah. It's like a small goal every day. It's like every day, you know, I want to play with the kids for this much time, or you know what I mean? It's like that adds stacks. Yeah,
Just the it's
it's
just
just
the
universal.
accountability.
It's universal.
We did this pre-order for the club. We did a pre-order SIPOP. It's the biggest SIPOP drop we've ever done. And we did it, I think, starting in December. And it's been a really interesting process because I've gotten to see like where the SIPOP bottlenecks for me. And some of it, man, is just like the shipping thing. I'll finish pieces that for that week. We'll start to ship a day late. We won't get, we'll do too many, we'll start to ship too many and not get them out on Friday. And so we've started to pull back into that concept of like, no, it's better to have them going out every week in smaller numbers and just having that task completed. There's also like there's like a mental component that feels really good with that too, where like you're not the post office. You know what I mean? Where the work just never ends. It's like, nope. Okay, it's Thursday afternoon. We got the shipping done.
Well, and it's like
Closure.
human psychology. You know how when you click on something on a computer, you get a loading bar and it's like downloading or whatever. My understanding of that, maybe this is not 100% true, is that those loading bars are all just fake. That because if you watch them, They don't associate. It's not like a consistent time frame that they're moving. They're just randomly accelerating and decelerating. And the only reason they put that there is because of human psychology, that if the computer is just sitting there and it looks like it's doing nothing, and it's like all of a sudden it's done, that's like extremely frustrating for humans. It's like without even an artificial indication of progress, we get really frustrated. And that's what you just touched on. It's like seeing some go out and it's like number go down. The number I have to make, the number I have to ship is lower than it was last week. It's like even if it's mathematically not necessarily any different than piling them all up and then going crazy and shipping them
Or
all.
even at a slight dip, like, hey, at the end of 2 weeks or at the end of whatever, we'll do more and we'll save 3% cost or whatever it is. There's
It's
a
like,
balance point.
it's like that loading bar. It's like if they didn't have it on the screen and that made the computer move faster, that would be worse than having it and it makes it a little bit slower
Dude,
because
that's the end of the episode right there, because that's so good. It's like, is our loading bars real?
Yeah, I
But
don't
it's
think they are.
true. Shipping notifications, like all of these things. So there's an element of work that allows us to satisfy the human nature of wanting to see progress, as opposed to it being like an unknown magical force. Like, oh, it's going to happen when it happens.
And it's universal in that regard too, because like the metric of consumer confidence in the economy, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not, is the economy doing well? That doesn't matter, actually.
It's how
What
people
matters
feel
is
about the economy.
do they feel like they're winning or not? Do they feel like they can invest or not? It doesn't matter if they can or can't. It matters that they feel like they can or can't. You know what I mean? So it's
Oh,
all,
dude. Goes deep. That's like Vegas, where you're like, do you feel like you can win? Because it's like, it's the human nature of it. That's a pretty fun one. All right, I'm going to look at what I can start to bring in to completion weekly. The biggest thing right now, like the Kihoku, I'm so spotty with it because I don't have that. And like, honestly, I might be better off looking at it and be like, all right, every week I have to finish two of these. And then that gives me at the end of a month, like, it sounds crazy, but like, I have to have all of the parts remachined and reset. I think in my head, I think my number has been too nebulous. I think that I'm almost trying to work too efficiently in areas where that it's not in place.
And maybe even smaller than saying I want to finish two of these, maybe say on Monday I machine five of them.
Right, as opposed to just machining all day.
On Tuesday or Monday afternoon I heat treat them. And while they're heat treating I run the scales, five of them. And you do that every week. Or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's like
Whatever it is, right?
you don't
It's
want the goal to be we're gonna make this many knives a week,
no. Okay.
because that's a I've said in our shop
You
because
go back in, you're
people are
back
like,
into
how
it.
many knives do you want to make a week? I'm like, I don't care, I don't think about that.
Don't
It's
think
an
about it.
interesting number, it's a good way to track. It's a data point, but it's not a goal. The goal is a nominal week. The goal is to do the checklist and then the number of that you produce is the measure of that after the
Based on
fact.
that.
Like,
And
let's
then
say
as efficiency increases, that number goes up by
number goes up,
default.
but you
So,
don't have to
okay.
think about the number for it to go up. You think
How
about
would
the
you
list.
align that first? So if you're saying that, right, it's like what are the, oh man, I don't even know how to ask that question. Like
Just
if the goal is not to make two knives a week, right, or five knives a week or whatever it is, what is the starting goal? Where do you even pick that initial like obligation?
So I would just create that weekly schedule, honestly, because it's like if it's just like going to the gym, you know, it's like I got, you know, bench press day. I'm going to do like, you know, it's like you have your push day, you have your pull day, you have your leg day, you have your core day. It's the same exact thing. Just design out that schedule. And it's going to be different than ours because it's not all you're doing. You're doing, it's not going to be a full day every day because it's,
And so for me, I basically have to fit that into a different pocket. So it's like if I was going to align 4 hours a day for one product line or like or just manufacturing, where it's like, that's an interesting way to do it. Okay, I'm gonna think about this a little bit more, and then maybe when we record next week, I'll
Yeah.
see if I've come to some conclusions around like what I can add to that like weekly cycle, or if my cycle by default needs to be longer. But I like the idea of this closed loop, and I think I've been struggling with that.
Or it could be just a thought, it could be a 40-hour week cycle, but you only do it once a month. Like
Oh,
it's a
that's an
full, like
interesting.
it's a
There's
full
so
week.
many ways to do this.
Yeah.
Right. Because that we've talked about this before, which is like the idea, like design work, right? You had recently said, you're like, I have not done design work in a while, and I need to create time for that. It's like, is that 2 hours a day, or is it 1 week a month? Like it, there's some difficulty there.
Yeah.
I know you gotta go do family stuff. Let's wrap it.
All right.
And
That was fun.
dude, that was fun. I'm all fired up now.
Yeah, I know,
Thanks,
right? I appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening.
guys. Talk
Yeah,
soon.
peace.